body turned into seafoam. I'm no longer a physical form, but my spirit lives on.
That's weird, Connor said.
Oh, that's wonderful, Alex said. I was always so sad after reading your story. Not many people know your real story. They always assume you had a happily ever after.
There are many who don't, the spirit said. I believe you two are looking for something that once belonged to me.
I don't think so, Connor said.
Wait, do you mean the saber from the deepest sea? Alex asked anxiously. Do you know what it is?
How do you know we're looking for it? Connor asked suspiciously.
I know many things the average entity doesn't, the spirit said. Especially things said or felt near water.
Swan Lake, Alex said. We were talking about the wishing spell items we had left to collect while we were traveling across Swan Lake.
So, Miss Foam Lady, formerly known as the Little Mermaid, Connor said. What is the saber of the deepest sea? We've been trying to figure it out since we got here.
As you recall, I traded my ability to speak to the sea witch for a pair of legs so I could be with the prince on shore, the spirit said. After he fell in love with the other woman, my sisters traded their hair for a knife from the sea witch. She said that if I killed the prince with it, I could return to the sea as a mermaid. But ultimately, I couldn't go through with it and became what I am today.
The knife, Alex said eagerly. The saber from the deepest sea is the knife the sea witch gave you. Of course, I was expecting it to be much bigger.
Yes, the spirit said.
Hold up, Connor said. You went through all that trouble for a guy? Were there not any available mermen?
Perhaps that is the lesson of my story, the spirit said.
And where is the knife now? Alex asked.
I gave it to a man, not too long ago, who needed it for the same reason you do now, the spirit said. I gave it to him on one condition, that he destroy it after he finished with it.
Oh no, Connor said, putting his hands on his head and pulling his hair. So it's gone? Alex asked, about to cry.
It is gone, but it isn't destroyed, the spirit said. The man failed to fulfill his agreement, fearing that he might need it again someday.
So where did he put it? Connor asked.
It's in a place where people put things they never want to see again, the spirit said.
He flushed it? Connor asked.
No, remember that place the traveling tradesman was telling us about? Alex said. He must have dropped it in the thornbush pit.
Oh, great, Connor said sarcastically. Why did he have to drop it into a cursed pit? Why couldn't he have just dropped it in a gopher hole?
We're never going to get to it, Alex said. If we even get close to that place, the vines in the thornbush will drag us to the bottom of the pit forever.
Unless you have these, the foam spirit said.
She extended both of her hands, and two necklaces, each with a small golden shell, appeared in them.
Wear these while you retrieve the knife from the bottom of the thornbush pit, and the cursed plants will not harm you.
Thank you, Alex said.
The twins leaned forward to take the shells out of her foaming hands, but the spirit pulled them away.
I will only give you these if you promise to destroy the knife as soon as you're done with it, the spirit said.
The twins looked at each other and nodded.
Of course, Alex said.
No problem, Connor said.
Very well, the spirit said, and handed them over to the twins. Be careful, though. The shells are twins, too. If one breaks, the other shell will as well. Remember that.
Why are you doing this for us? Alex asked.
Why do you always ask what someone's motives are when they help you? The spirit asked.
The question took Alex off guard.
Because people don't really help each other where we come from, Alex said. They do occasionally, but it's rarely without reason. Good people are hard to find.
It can't be too difficult. I'm looking at two now, the spirit said. Which is why I was inclined to help you, and which is why I'm also inclined to tell you this. You are not the only ones after the wishing spell.
We know, Connor said. The evil queen is too.
She's the one who sent the wolves after us, Alex said. Isn't she?
Yes, the spirit said. She is as determined to find the knife as you are. That is why you must hurry if you're going to beat her to it. Unfortunately, the wishing spell can only be used once more.
What? Connor said. Both the twins felt like someone had kicked them in the stomach. This definitely complicated matters.
You mean if she gets to the knife first, that's it? Game over?
Unfortunately so, the spirit said.
The bubble around the twins was almost gone. It barely covered the clam they sat in. Their time underwater was running out.
We can't let that happen, Alex said, shaking her head. We have to get there first. We have to go right now.
I'll have my mermaid escort you there as fast as they can, but once you are on land, you must travel the rest of the way on your own, the spirit said. Stay safe, children.
The seafoam spirit fizzled out and disappeared. The mermaid swam down to the twins, and each grabbed hold of the clamshell Alex and Connor sat in. Together, they moved the twins through the ocean onto their next adventure.
Chapter 19. The Thornbush Pit. The mermaids escorted the twins through the ocean and up a river into the northern part of the Sleeping Kingdom. Alex and Connor were only a few miles away from the Thornbush Pit and began their walk to the place where they would find the last wishing spell item.
How do we get the wishing spell to work once we find the knife? Connor asked.
I think we just put all the items together and let them do the rest, Alex said.
I suppose, Connor said.
The land was dead and dry around them. The roads were bumpy and covered in stone. It was by far the least attractive area they had been to in all of the land of stories.
I don't know about you, but I am so looking forward to getting out of this place, Connor said.
I know what you mean, Alex said half-heartedly. I miss Mom so much.
I can't wait to get back to air conditioning and television, Connor said. Boy, have I missed those things. And food! Don't get me started about food.
I bet we have so much homework to catch up on, too, Alex said happily.
Connor grunted. I didn't think about that.
He also wondered if he would have to serve all those detentions when he got home as well. Would being trapped in the fairy tale world for a week or two get him out of it? Alex completely sympathized with her brother. She'd been so excited to discover the land of stories, but they had had so many treacherous experiences that even she was anxious to get home. But now, looking around at the land, even as ugly as this part of the kingdom was, she couldn't help but think how much she was going to miss it.
We have seen some amazing things, Alex said.
Very true, Connor said.
And we have met some extraordinary people, she said.
Can't deny that, Connor said, shaking his head.
It's a shame that we can't come and go to this place as we please, Alex said. You don't think you'll miss it just a tiny bit?
Connor immediately shook his head, and his mouth positioned into the shape to say no. But when he thought about it more, he hesitated.
We've had our moments, Connor said. We're definitely leaving with memories no one else will have. Think about all the stories we'll be able to tell our kids someday.
Right, Alex said, but this only made her think about their father.
Without realizing it, being in the land of stories had filled the emptiness they were left with when their dad died. Discovering that their dad was from the fairy tale world had been the most meaningful part of the adventure.
Mom and Grandma are going to have so much explaining to do, Connor said.
For sure, Alex agreed. I wonder where Dad lived.
We'll find out, Connor said, and smiled.
I wonder if he knew any of the people that we've met or seen. I wonder if we have family here.
Alex stopped walking. Her eyes grew almost as big as her open mouth.
What if we're related to the Charming or White Dynasties? Alex proclaimed excitedly.
Or maybe we're 1/16th ogre or elf or something cool, Connor said.
The idea gave them a new boost in their step. They finally reached the Thornbush Pit and stopped dead in their tracks. It was a frightening sight. It was extremely wide and incredibly deep and filled to the top with plants, some dead and some alive. The vines and thornbush moved around like thousands of snakes. The pit was alive and hungry. Ruins of an old castle sat on the edge of the pit, consisting of nothing but a few walls and a stony staircase that led to nowhere.
We're actually going in there? Connor said.
Let's put on our shells, Alex said.
They each tied a shell necklace around their necks and slowly walked to the edge of the pit. The vines and thornbush shot straight toward them like a frog's tongue to a fly, but then jolted back, repelled by the magic shells.
Looks like they work, Connor said.
They began to climb down into the pit. They used the dead thornbush on the side of the pit as a ladder, scratching themselves and drawing blood on a different part of their bodies every few feet. The thornbush and vines that were alive moved away from the twins as they passed. They watched them like hungry serpents, ready to strike at any second. Alex and Connor climbed as low as they could go. The pit floor was covered in rubbish, like a giant junkyard. The smell was unbearable, and the twins had to cover their noses as they searched.
Whoa, Connor said. This is like a massive trash bin. Can you imagine all the secrets we could discover just by going through this place?
Remember what we're here for, Alex said, and then suddenly screamed.
What is it?
Connor asked. She had almost stepped on the hand of a skeleton.
"Who is that?" Connor said. "Or should I say, who was that?"
"I don't want to know," said Alex, shaken up by the discovery. "I've never seen a skeleton before." It was only the first of dozens. There were skeletons and parts of skeletons everywhere. Each one was harder to look at than the one before. Some had been down here longer than others. Alex had to take deep breaths to prevent herself from getting sick. They found countless knives and daggers and swords scattered across the pit.
"Is this it?" Connor asked, holding up one for his sister to see.
"No, that's wooden," Alex said.
"What about this?" he asked, holding up another.
"No, that's made of steel," Alex said. "Remember, it was made in the ocean."
"Oh," Connor said. "Like this?"
He held up a knife that matched his sister's description perfectly. It had a curved handle that was made of coral and bits of shell, and a long blade made of bright sea glass.
"That has to be it," Alex said gleefully. "Connor, we did it! We found the last wishing spell item!"
She gave her brother a huge bear hug and kissed him on the cheek. They were so incredibly happy, tears formed in their eyes. They were going home.
"Let's get out of this pit as fast as possible," Connor said. "It gives me the creeps."
The twins went back to the dead thornbush and began climbing up the side of the pit. When they were about two-thirds of the way up, a branch caught hold of Connor's necklace and ripped it off his neck. As if it were happening in slow motion, Connor saw the shell begin to fall away from him toward the bottom of the pit. He reached for it, but it was too late. It was gone. The shell hit the bottom of the pit floor and shattered. Alex and Connor looked down at the broken shell and then looked at each other with the same horrified expression.
"Oops," Connor whispered.
The living vines in Thornbush vibrated with excitement. The shells were useless now. Vines began shooting towards the twins.
"We've got to get out of here,"
Alex yelled, and the twins rushed up the side of the pit faster than they had ever climbed anything before. Their fingertips were just about to reach the top of the pit when vines wrapped themselves around Alex's and Connor's feet and dragged them downward. Connor stabbed the saber into the ground outside the mouth of the pit, and he and his sister held onto it while they were being pulled, determined not to end up like the other victims of the vines. More vines wrapped themselves around the twins, increasing the fight. Alex and Connor were nearly completely covered in plants. Alex lost her grip around the knife and began to fall back into the pit, but Connor grabbed hold of her just in time. He couldn't hold on to both for much longer. One by one, his fingers began slipping from the knife's handle. Connor's hand lost its grip on the knife, and he and his sister were both dragged away. But right as his hand slipped away, he felt a cold, clammy hand grab onto his and try to pull him and his sister out of the pit. It was a struggle. The plants weren't giving up. Alex and Connor felt like the rope in a giant game of tug-of-war.
"Damn you, miserable plants!"
said a very proper voice that the twins recognized.
"Let them go, you overly advanced shrubbery!"
With one final tug, most of the vines broke, and Alex and Connor were saved. Their momentum piled them on top of whoever had just saved them.
"Froggy!"
Alex declared, and gave their old friend a tremendous embrace.
"It's you!" Connor said.
Although he had had trouble shaking Froggy's hand when they first met him, Connor was now hugging him like he was his long-lost relative.
"Hello, Connor, Alex," Froggy said.
He was almost suffocated by their affection.
"You saved our lives," Alex said. "How did you know we were here?"
Connor asked. Froggy got to his feet, straightened the tie of his suit, and helped the twins up.
"I've been looking for you two for days," Froggy said. "The amount of ground you've covered is remarkable. Thank goodness I crossed paths with those mermaids, or I would have never found you."
"I'm so proud of you," Alex said. "You're out of your house. You're out in the world."
"What made you come out of your hole in the ground?" Connor said. "The fairy godmother's looking for you two," Froggy said.
The twins were very surprised and confused to hear this.
"What?" Connor said. "What does she want with us?"
"Oh, no," Alex said. "The glass slipper. She must know I broke it and is furious."
"Glass slipper?"
Froggy said, with a raised eyebrow equivalent. Alex shyly looked around.
"Well, yes," she said. "We've been busy collecting."
She opened her bag and let Froggy peer into it.
"You've collected all the wishing spell items? Already?"
Froggy asked. He wasn't sure whether to be proud or shocked.
"Yep,"
Connor said, pulling the knife out of the ground. "And believe me, it wasn't easy."
"We got the very last item," Alex said happily. "We can go home."
Froggy was speechless. These two children had done something he had only dreamed about doing for years.
"That's extraordinary, children," Froggy said,
but his happy expression deflated to a worried one.
But you can't go home yet.
Why not? Alex asked. Yeah, Connor said. Why not?
Froggy was the one who had introduced them to the wishing spell in the first place. Why was he saying they couldn't use it now?
I promised the fairy godmother that I would bring you to her, Froggy said. And in exchange, she said that she would turn me back into my human form. Please, you must let me take you to her.
The twins could tell that he didn't want to ask this of them, but was desperately hoping they would agree.
Froggy, you have no idea what we've been through to get all these items, Alex said.
We want to go home, Connor added. Now.
We want to help, Alex said. But what if the fairy godmother takes away some of the items that we've, how do I say this, forcefully borrowed?
Then we'd be stuck here again for who knows how long, Connor said.
Froggy looked ashamed of himself.
I understand, children. Forgive me. I wasn't expecting you to have assembled all the wishing spell items so soon.
He tried to cover his disappointment with a fake smile.
Can I help you assemble the wishing spell, then?
Alex and Connor looked to each other, feeling incredibly guilty. They wanted to get home more than anything, but how could they tell him no? He'd done so much for them.
I suppose sticking around for another day won't be so bad, Connor said, knowing his sister was thinking the exact same thing.
It would be a shame to end our journey here, Alex said. Children, you can't stay for me, Froggy said. You've got everything you need. Please don't let me stop you.
We'd still be lost somewhere in the Dwarf Forest without you, Froggy, Alex said. And if the fairy godmother tries to take our stuff, we'll just run like crazy away from her, Connor said. We've gotten so good at it, you should see us in action.
Froggy's big round eyes became more watery than usual.
Children, you are the kindest souls I have ever been fortunate enough to meet.
The twins smiled at him. Doing this for him made them feel better than they had felt their entire stay in the Land of Stories.
Where to? Alex asked him.
Suddenly, a piercing scream sounded across the land. All three of them jerked their heads toward it.
Let me go!
A woman screamed.
What's going on?
Alex asked. Soon they heard a galloping horse approaching and felt the thumps of its hooves through the ground. Coming toward them at full speed from the distance was a familiar cream-colored horse.
It's Porridge, Connor said, and Goldilocks.
Goldilocks and Porridge were charging toward the Thornbush Pit, and they were dragging Queen Red Riding Hood behind them. The twins and Froggy all stood motionless at the sight of it. They thought their eyes were playing tricks on their brains.
Do you see this too, or am I imagining it? Connor asked.
I order you to release me at once,
Red Riding Hood said. Her dress was so big and layered that she wasn't harmed from being dragged, but she was extremely aggravated.
Do you have any idea what my soldiers are going to do to you once they catch you?
Oh, shut up, you red-hooded harlot, Goldilocks said.
She and Porridge stopped a short distance from the twins and Froggy. Goldilocks hopped down and then dragged Red Riding Hood past them to the Thornbush Pit. She vaguely recognized the twins.
I remember you, Goldilocks said.
Hi there, Alex said. Do you need a hand? Connor asked.
Nope, Goldilocks said. Just taking out the trash.
What are you three doing just standing there?
Red screamed.
Help me!
I said silence, you basket-carrying bimbo,
Goldilocks said, and dragged her closer to the pit.
What's going on?
Alex asked, and she, Connor, and Froggy followed them, not sure how or who to help.
This lunatic broke down one of my kingdom's gates and rode her horse all the way into my throne room, lassoed me, and has dragged me all the way here,
Red said.
And now she's going to kill me!
Yes, I am, Goldilocks said. Wait, why are you going to kill Queen Red Riding Hood?
Froggy asked.
Because she's mental, said Red.
She knows why, Goldilocks said.
They reached the edge of the pit, and the twins grew very nervous that they were about to witness a murder.
They'll hang you for this, Red shouted.
They won't be able to prove anything, Goldilocks said. They'll never find your body.
Goldilocks stood right up on her own 2 feet. She was still tied up, and Goldilocks began aggressively pushing her toward the pit's edge.
Please don't do this, Red pleaded. It was such a long time ago. We were all just kids.
We haven't been kids for years, Goldilocks said. You've had plenty of chances for redemption.
I love him too. I was just doing what I thought I had to,
Red said.
You just couldn't stand that I had something you didn't, Goldilocks yelled.
Goldilocks went in for the final push, but Red dodged it, and Goldilocks almost fell into the pit herself. Red ran away from her as fast as possible, running along the edge of the pit. The plants below moved with excitement. They knew one of them was bound to fall in.
Come here, Goldilocks yelled. Get away from me, you fugitive floozy,
Red said. They did an entire lap around the pit, and Red ran into the castle ruins. Goldilocks took out her sword and began swinging it at her, barely missing her by inches.
This is awful,
Alex said with her hands covering her cheeks.
This is awesome, Connor said. $5 says Goldilocks wins.
The twins wanted to help, but there was nothing they could do without getting into harm's way.
We used to be such good friends,
Red said, constantly ducking Goldilocks' sword.
You don't know what a friend is, Goldilocks said, her swing coming much closer each time. You could have cleared my name the day you became queen of that pathetic kingdom.
I never even wanted to be queen in the first place. I just wanted to impress him,
Red confessed.
Keeping you an outlaw kept you away from him. It wasn't anything personal.
Personal,
Goldilocks said, absolutely infuriated.
Forcing me to live a life of running and committing crimes to survive because you wanted to steal my boyfriend wasn't personal?
She swung her sword hard at Red and knocked a big chunk out of the ruined stone wall. Red ran up the decaying staircase. It was the only place left to go. Goldilocks ran up after her, and Red was cornered. The only way to escape was to jump into the pit.
If you let me go, I'll clear your name, Red begged.
Liar, Goldilocks said.
I'll give you my castle. Half of it's being rebuilt because of a fire. It looks wonderful,
Red said.
I don't want your castle. I want revenge,
Goldilocks said, and pushed Red off the staircase. Red screamed and fell down toward the pit. The vines reached toward her, happy to finally be fed. Suddenly, a rope came out of nowhere and lassoed Red around the waist, just as she fell into the pit and was swallowed up by the vines and thornbush.
What the?
Goldilocks said. The twins and Froggy turned to see a woman riding a black horse on the other side of the pit, holding the other end of the rope.
It's the huntsman's daughter, Connor yelled and pointed at her.
Red screamed as the vines pulled her down toward the bottom of the pit. The huntsman's daughter tied the rope to the horse and took off. Red was yanked out of the pit and dragged behind her.
Not again, Red screamed.
She was dragged off into the horizon, now captive of the huntress.
Son of a witch,
Goldilocks said, watching a stranger ride off with her chance at revenge. She hopped down from the staircase, and Porridge joined her by the ruins.
What just happened?
Connor asked, completely overwhelmed by all the excitement.
I don't know, Alex said, but after seeing the huntsman's daughter, I have a bad feeling.
Who was that woman? Goldilocks asked.
The huntsman's daughter, Connor said. She's working for the evil queen.
The evil queen,
said Goldilocks, growing even angrier.
We have to get as far away from this place as possible, Alex instructed.
Oh, no,
Froggy said softly. He looked more frightened than the twins had ever seen him. Out of the distance, the big bad wolf pack crept toward them. The wolves were all growling, more irritated and vicious than ever before. Steam was practically coming out of their nostrils. They surrounded the twins, Froggy, Goldilocks, and Porridge. Goldilocks stood in front of the twins. Even she was scared. Normally, she wouldn't have considered the wolves to be any more than she could handle, but the way they stared at the group, hungry and irritated, she knew this wasn't going to be a sporting encounter in the forest.
After what you put us through, we gotta claw out your hearts,
Malumquah growled through gritted teeth at the twins.
And look who's decided to join them. I guess we get Red Riding Hood and Goldilocks tonight.
The rest of the wolves howled their excitement. Just to let you know, you just missed Red Riding Hood, Connor said.
Nice try,
Malumquah said.
What do you want with children and an overgrown frog?
Goldilocks asked.
We're taking the children to the evil queen,
Malumquah said.
We have no interest in the frog. Dig in, boys.
Froggy's face turned a pale green. The wolves moved toward him, snapping their massive jaws in his direction. Froggy turned to the twins.
I'm going to get help, children,
Froggy whispered to the petrified twins. A wolf leapt toward him, but Froggy jumped twice as high into the air, and the wolf missed him. Froggy landed on the other side of the circle the wolves had formed around them and took off running. A few wolves chased after him as he disappeared into the distance.
Froggy!
Alex yelled after him. All they could do was pray he would be all right.
Porridge,
Goldilocks said.
I want you to get out of here. Do you understand? This is one battle we won't be able to win.
The horse was hesitant to leave her at first, but then nodded. She took off in the same direction Froggy had leapt. A wolf tried to attack the horse as it left, but Porridge kicked the wolf with her hind legs, and the wolf landed in the thornbush pit. He whimpered the entire way to the bottom, as the vines wrapped themselves around the wolf and dragged him down to the bottom forever. The rest of the wolves weren't going to allow any more escapes.
We're going to see the queen,
Malamclaw growled.
And if anyone else tries to run off, it'll be the last thing you do.
The twins trembled. Goldilocks put her hands on the twins' shoulders, leaned close to them, and whispered into their ears.
Be brave, children, Goldilocks said. Courage is one thing no one can ever take away from you.
Chapter 20 Heart of Stone. The wolves led the twins and Goldilocks across the dead and deserted land. They walked for miles and miles across the rocky ground, never stopping for anything. The wolves kept a close eye on their captives. If the twins so much as breathed too deeply, they would get a threatening growl. The wolves had confiscated Goldilocks' sword and Alex's bag, so they couldn't get to the wishing spell items. Alex closely watched her bag being carried in one of the wolves' mouths. Everything she and her brother needed was in there. Their chance at going home was just a few feet away, and yet out of reach. The twins didn't know if they were more angry or scared. Just minutes before, they had been positive they were on their way home, and now they didn't even know where they were, where they were going, or if they would even survive what was ahead. Being so afraid gave them an odd sense of courage. They were being taken as prisoners to one of the most infamous villains of all time. They didn't see how things could get much worse. The area they were traveling through seemed foreign even to Goldilocks, who the twins were certain had seen every part of every kingdom. Her eyes darted around with as much curiosity as the twins did. The land looked different from the rest of the Sleeping Kingdom. This land didn't seem to be sleeping like the rest of the kingdom did. This land seemed to have been murdered. A decrepit castle finally came into view in the distance. It was made of stone, but looked so frail that a strong wind could knock it over. Alex and Connor knew, without having to be told, that this is where the wolves were taking them, and somewhere inside, the evil queen was waiting. They reached the front of the castle, and Malamclaw howled. A rickety drawbridge was slowly lowered, and a towering man with a graying beard, dressed in several layers of animal skins, greeted the wolves.
She's been expecting them, the huntsman said.
The wolves guided the twins and Goldilocks over the drawbridge. As soon as the twins entered the castle, they wanted to leave. All the dust and cobwebs didn't make for a pleasant welcome. The huntsman pushed the twins down a stony corridor, through a set of large doors that creaked horribly, and into a large great hall. The great hall was empty, except for a few chairs and a small table. Red Riding Hood was tied to one of the chairs, with a large white scarf tied around her mouth. Her eyes were teary and puffy. She was excited to see the twins at first, happy not to be the only prisoner, but then began to panic under her restraints when she saw Goldilocks and the wolves behind them. The huntress stood next to Red, keeping a careful watch over the fidgeting queen. In the middle of the room, facing two tall mirrors, one gold and one black, was a hooded woman. She was very still and very silent.
Seat them,
the woman said, still with her back toward them. Without any doubt, the twins knew she was the evil queen. They could just feel it. They had never been so tense in their lives. The huntsman and the huntress forcibly sat Alex, Connor, and Goldilocks down in the chairs and tied ropes around their torsos, hands, and feet.
Easy,
Goldilocks said, glaring at the huntress, who tripled her knots. Did anyone ever tell you it isn't nice to kidnap other people's hostages? Red let out a high-pitched cry and mumbled something along the lines of,
This is so unfair!
The twins now understood why she'd had a handkerchief in her mouth in the first place.
We've brought you the twins, plus a bonus, your majesty.
Malamclaw lowered his head in a scornful and mocking bow. There was heavy tension between the two.
Did anyone escape? The evil queen asked.
Just an overgrown frog and a horse,
Malamclaw growled.
Then we don't have much time, she said.
Put the items on the table.
The huntsman seized Alex's bag from the wolf carrying it and placed it on the table next to the twins. The evil queen had her own collection of wishing spell items on display here. A lock of golden hair, a chunk of Red Riding Hood's basket, and the other glass slipper.
A deal is a deal, Malamclaw said. We brought you the twins. Now give us Red Riding Hood.
Red Riding Hood whimpered and said something like,
Why is this happening to me?
Through the handkerchief.
You will have her when I am finished with the children, the evil queen said. Now wait outside.
That was not part of our bargain,
Malamclaw bellowed, and his pack snarled behind him.
I said wait outside,
the evil queen ordered. Her voice was so overpowering that the twins felt tears form in their eyes from the mere sound of it.
You can have Red Riding Hood, Goldilocks, and the children when I am satisfied.
The wolves were infuriated, but they left the hall and waited outside the castle.
"Empty the bag," the Evil Queen ordered.
The huntsman did as he was told. He pulled out all the items the twins had collected, one by one, and placed them on the table surface. The lock of hair, the glass slipper, the chunk of basket, the stone crown, the vial containing the fairy tear, the spindle, the jewels, and the knife.
"We need those," Connor said, squirming in the ropes. "Why do you need the wishing spell anyway? Don't you have powers or something?"
"The only powers I have are the powers of intimidation," the Evil Queen said.
She turned away from the mirrors and looked at the twins. She wasn't the vicious monster they had expected. She was still very much the woman from the portrait in Snow White's palace, but she had been weathered by time and fatigue. Her face was plain, but it was a plainness that had so much potential for beauty, had time and circumstance allowed it. Her eyes were dark and bleak. She seemed empty and cold down to her soul. The Evil Queen walked over to the table and observed all the wishing spell items. She picked up the vial that held the fairy tear and stared into it.
"As soon as this tear touches the table, the wishing spell will be mine," she said.
Seeing the Evil Queen near all the items they had worked so hard to get ignited a fury inside Connor. He wanted to go home, and he wasn't about to let her stop them. If they weren't going to get to use the wishing spell, then neither was she. Connor struggled against the ropes with all his might. It was painful, but he managed to get one of his feet free. He kicked as hard and as high as he could and knocked the vial out of the Evil Queen's hand. The vial flew across the room. The Evil Queen's eyes watched it as it soared away from her.
"Catch it!" she demanded.
The huntsman ran as fast as he could and threw himself on the ground with his hands extended to catch it. But the vial hit the dusty stone floor inches from his fingertips and shattered. The tear sank into the stone and vanished. The Evil Queen stared at Connor. Her face didn't move or express much, but the slightest movements made Connor very well aware that she was enraged.
"Stupid boy," the Evil Queen said.
She struck him hard across the face with the back of her hand. Connor's whole body shifted with the blow.
"Connor!"
Alex said.
"I'm fine," Connor said,
slowly lifting his head straight to look at the Evil Queen. The whole side of his face began to swell.
"How long will it take to retrieve new fairy tears?" the Evil Queen asked.
"Days, Your Highness,"
the huntsman said, getting back to his feet.
"The fairy we caught only screamed when we tried to collect tears from her. None were produced. If my daughter left now, she could be back before sunrise 2 days from now."
"We don't have that kind of time,"
the Evil Queen said softly to herself. She promptly turned around and faced her mirrors.
"Mirror, mirror, on the wall. How much longer till forces invade this hall?" she asked.
The reflection in the black mirror became very cloudy, and condensation began to drip down the glass.
"Connor, look! It's the magic mirror," Alex said.
The dark silhouette of a man appeared in the mirror. A low and hoarse voice filled the great hall.
"This castle offered my queen sanctuary for weeks, but an army now approaches, led by a frog that speaks. They move quickly in this direction, ready to attack, and they've joined forces with a green-colored horse and a man named Jack."
"Jack?"
Goldilocks said.
"Jack?"
Red tried to say.
"Soldiers are coming,"
Alex whispered to her brother.
"Froggy's alive. He got help."
"Those are probably my soldiers coming," Red mumbled. "They're coming to rescue me and slaughter all of you. Especially you," she said, giving Goldilocks a dirty look.
The Evil Queen's eyes drifted from her magic mirror to the Mirror of Truth and watched Alex through the reflection. She stared at her through the mirror, absolutely mesmerized. It was the most expressive the twins had seen her since they had arrived.
"What should we do, Your Majesty?"
the huntsman asked. The Evil Queen ignored him. Her attention was fixated on Alex.
"Why is she looking at you like that?"
Connor asked.
"I don't know,"
Alex said, with a trembling jaw. Everyone knew the Evil Queen had never cared too much for young girls, and Alex was afraid she would be the next victim to be offered a poisoned apple.
"Your Highness, what are your orders?"
the huntsman pleaded.
"If soldiers are coming, we must leave."
"No," the Evil Queen said. "I'll be finished before they arrive. Now I wish to be alone with the children. Take the others to the dungeon."
The huntsman was hesitant, but he and the huntress partially untied Red and Goldilocks and shoved them toward the door.
"Watch it, Gramps," Goldilocks said.
Do we get our own cells?
Red mumbled.
You can't put me in a cell with her. You might as well give me to the wolves.
The door slammed behind them. The twins were left alone in the Great Hall with the Evil Queen.
Alex, Connor whispered to his sister, I don't want to sound cheesy, but no matter what happens, I just wanted to say that I love you. You're the best sister I could ever have, and these last several days have been the most extraordinary in my entire life.
Don't do that, Connor, Alex said, holding back tears with all her strength.
You're saying goodbye. Don't say goodbye. We're going to be okay. Soldiers are on their way. They'll save us.
She didn't know which one of them she was convincing.
They'll save us.
Unfortunately, no one can save you now, the Evil Queen said.
So, are you going to kill us then?
Alex asked. The Evil Queen was silent. She didn't move a single muscle.
Why are you doing this to us?
Connor asked.
Why are you so evil?
Ah, the Evil Queen said. The age-old question. What makes one become who they are? Let me ask you this, children. What makes you not evil?
The twins didn't understand the question. They were sure she was playing a mental game with them, but they answered with pride and honesty.
We were raised right, Alex said. We had two wonderful parents who taught us to be good people, and we believe good things happen to those who are good at heart.
So, you were environmentally influenced into being good people. That's precious, the Evil Queen said. You said you had two parents. What happened to them?
It made the twins sick to hear her ask about something so dear to them. Our dad died, Connor said. Not that it's any of your business.
Was he a good person? Was he good at heart? The Evil Queen said.
He was the best, Connor said.
I see, she said. Then he was wrong, wasn't he? Surely a good person would never have had such a tragedy happen to him. He must have taught you a lie.
What are you getting at, lady? Connor asked.
I had parents once, too. They taught me a similar lie, she said.
The twins glanced at each other after hearing this, and the queen saw the surprise in their eyes.
Shocking, isn't it? To know that someone like me had parents, had a life, and had loved once,
the Evil Queen said, becoming lost in thought.
So, if you had decent parents, who screwed you up? Connor asked. Or were you just born miserable?
The Evil Queen's eyes fell to the floor.
Much like you two, I was environmentally influenced into being who I am today.
She turned her back to the twins and faced her mirrors again.
I'm going to tell you a story, children. A story that has rarely been told,
the Evil Queen said.
I doubt there's a story we don't know,
Alex said.
You don't know this story, she said. It's mine.
Alex and Connor looked to each other nervously. Did they want to hear this story?
Once upon a time, there was an enchantress, the Evil Queen began. She was unlike all the fairies and witches that had ever lived before her. She lived without consequence, and lived on desire, and desire alone. She gave herself anything and everything she wanted, never caring about who she hurt by doing so. Many years before I was born, the enchantress decided she wanted the world, and sought it one kingdom at a time. There weren't as many kingdoms to conquer back then, especially after she put Sleeping Beauty's kingdom under the sleeping curse. Very late one winter's night, two villagers heard banging on their door and found a young maiden shivering on their doorstep. She was with child, and was exhausted from running. She had just escaped from someone or something, but the villagers couldn't ask questions, because she began delivering the child right then and there. The maiden died giving birth to the child that night. Despite the mystery surrounding the maiden, the villagers adopted this child. It was a baby girl. They named her Evely.
Evely?
Alex asked, and her eyes grew wide. The Evil Queen ignored her and continued the story.
Evely grew up to be a very beautiful young woman. She was a kind and good-spirited girl, and everyone in her village loved her, especially one man her age, a boy named Mira. He was a poet, and used to recite poems to her all day by the edge of a lake, a little way away from their village. Evely tried to impress him with her own poems, although they were never very good. She would say to him every day, Mira, Mira by the lake, my heart is yours to take. They used to laugh together, and hold each other in their arms until dusk every day. the two fell madly in love and were engaged. However, on the eve of Evelie's wedding, the Enchantress came for her, claiming that she and her birth mother belonged to her. The Enchantress killed Evelie's adopted parents and took her into the far northeast to this very castle. Evelie became just one of the many slaves who belonged to the Enchantress. She had very big plans for the newest addition. Evelie was groomed to marry Prince White, the future king of the Northern Kingdom, and the Enchantress would control the kingdom through her. But Evelie resisted, of course. Her heart already belonged to one man. Mira looked for Evelie for years, and eventually found her. They wrote letters to each other, and exchanged them through the bars of Evelie's cell. The Enchantress ultimately discovered the letters. But the Enchantress was smart. She knew if she killed Mira, Evelie would be inconsolable and worthless to her. So instead, she imprisoned Mira inside a magic mirror for eternity. Evelie was heartbroken, the Evil Queen said.
You're Evelie, Alex said.
The man in your magic mirror? He was your fiancé? Connor asked. Yes, the Evil Queen said. I became Evelie, the Evil Queen of the Northern Kingdom. It has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? People tend to be creative when they're condemning others. So that's how you became queen? Alex said. Not exactly, the Evil Queen said, glaring at her. From the moment Mira was trapped inside the mirror, I refused to continue with the Enchantress's plan. I still pretended to go along with it, gaining her trust and becoming a protege of sorts. She kept a room full of potions here in the castle. I spent hours of every day in that room, immersing myself with the substances, learning everything about them. I concocted a poison so strong and deadly that all the trees and flowers for miles and miles were killed after 3 drops of the ground outside my cell window. I was positive it would bring the Enchantress to her end, and it did. The poison weakened the Enchantress to the state of an ailing human. She ran from the castle and died somewhere in the forest nearby, unable to take care of herself without magic. I freed her slaves from her castle, including the man who later became my huntsman. The one person I wasn't able to free, however, was Mira. He was trapped in the mirror, and there was no way to get him out. I traveled all over the kingdoms for years, seeking help from every witch and fairy, but no one knew how to free the man from the mirror. The curse was too strong. Seeing the man I loved every day through a layer of glass, unable to touch him, or kiss him, or hold him was unbearable. I was more than heartbroken. The pain was so deep I could barely breathe. I was sure my heart would eventually stop beating if I didn't do something about it. I found an old witch named Hagatha deep in the dwarf forests and begged her to help me. She, like everyone else before her, could do nothing about the mirror, but she treated my heartbreak. She cut my heart out of my chest and turned it into stone, the Evil Queen said.
Gross, Connor muttered.
She walked over to a stool on the side of her mirrors. On the top of the stool was a stone that resembled a human heart. Alex gasped when she realized what it was. Only when I touch the stone do I feel any heartbreak, pain, or emotion whatsoever, the Evil Queen said. She picked up the stone and held it tightly in her hand. The Evil Queen's reflection changed in the mirror of truth as she held the stone. They saw Evelie's reflection instead, the young and beautiful maiden the Evil Queen had once been. The Evil Queen set the stone back on the stool, and her reflection changed back into the cold and hooded woman she was today. Then you really are heartless, Alex said.
Why did you become queen then? Connor asked.
I figured being a queen and having a monarch's power would give me the authority I needed to find a way to free Mira, the Evil Queen said. Prince White became king and had recently been married. Soon it was announced that his wife was expecting the first child. I decided to strike before the heir was born. I used a love potion on the king, and he became enamored with me. That was easy. But getting rid of his pregnant wife was a difficult part. I poisoned her knitting needles and waited until she pricked herself. One cold night, while making a blanket for her future child, her water broke, and she pricked herself with one of the needles from the shock of it. She died, but her handmaidens were able to save the child, and Snow White was born. A few months later, I was married to the king, and he was dead a few months after that. I was able to continue my quest to free Mira. Unfortunately, being inside the mirror for so long began to affect Mira. His mind, his memory, and his appearance all started fading away. He began speaking in verse, like his poems when he was younger. He could see things happening in the world that were miles and miles away, but couldn't remember his own name. He was no longer a man.
He was a reflection. Had my heart not been turned into stone already, watching the man I loved with all my heart slowly forget who I was would have killed me for sure. I was getting older, and Mira barely recognized me anymore. I ordered every beautician in the kingdom to my palace and underwent every beauty regimen possible for years and years to preserve the little youth I had left. Word of my new activities got out, and the kingdom criticized me, saying I was vain and obsessed with beauty. As I got older, so did Snow White. She became more and more beautiful every day. She longed to find some motherly companionship in me, but I had none to give. She used to sneak into my chambers and watch me undergo preservation treatments for hours. One day, Snow White snuck into my chambers while I was away and discovered Mira in the mirror. She looked very similar to myself when I was her age, and Mira believed she was me. For months and months, Snow White was all he could talk about. "My queen is fair to see, but Snow White is far fairer than thee," he would say. He had a new face and name to give all the love he felt for me. I wanted her dead. I ordered my huntsman to take her into the woods and kill her. She escaped, but I tried again and again to kill her myself. I was convinced Mira would come back to me once she was dead. But it was too late. Mira was gone. He faded into what he's become today. My entire life has been spent trying to recover something that was taken from me so many years ago. However, I'll never be martyred for that life. I'll forever be known as the vain queen who tried to kill the poor, innocent, and helpless Princess Snow White, and nothing more, the evil queen said. But who wouldn't have gone to the ends of the earth to be reunited with the person they loved more than life itself? Who wouldn't have ripped their own heart out to stop that kind of pain? Alex couldn't stop the tears rolling down her face. There were so many times after the loss of her dad when she'd wished all the pain would go away. She may have turned her own heart into stone if she'd had the option. She couldn't help but see herself in the evil queen, and it was unsettling. "I've done many terrible things in my time, but many terrible things have been done to me over time as well," the evil queen said. "So as far as I'm concerned, the world and I are even."
"But it wasn't you," Alex said. "You weren't thinking clearly. If you had had your heart, you wouldn't have done all those horrible things to all those people. You're still Evely. Think about how differently people would feel about you if they knew this," Connor said.
"The world will always choose convenience over reality," the evil queen said. "It's easier to hate, blame, and fear than it is to understand. No one wants the truth. They want entertainment."
The evil queen turned back to the twins and saw the tears running down Alex's face. She walked over to Alex and let one of the tears roll onto her finger. The evil queen stared down at the tear, just as she had done to the vial of fairy tears.
"A sentimental story always gets the same reaction out of girls like you," the evil queen said.
She flicked Alex's tear onto the table with the wishing spell items. Suddenly, all the items began to glow, and a golden light began swirling above them. The evil queen had activated the wishing spell. Chapter 21. The Mirror.
"What?"
Alex said. Her head was throbbing from being so confused.
"This doesn't make any sense. It needed a fairy's tear."
"We can't let this happen," Connor screamed. "We have to stop her. She can't use the wishing spell." The twins struggled and fought against the ropes, but there's nothing they could do. It was too late. The light rose off the wishing spell items and began to circle around the evil queen.
"No!"
Connor screamed.
"Please don't!"
Alex yelled. The evil queen took a deep breath.
"Wishing spell. I wish to free the man in the mirror," she said.
The light shot toward the mirror like lightning. The whole mirror was consumed in light for a few moments before it faded. The glass melted away like ice on a warm day. The mirror looked like a doorway into a very dark room. The twins waited with anticipation. The evil queen walked over to the mirror, keeping a cautious distance away from it, but nothing happened. She got closer to the mirror, so close that the twins wondered if she was going to climb into it.
"Mira?"
the evil queen asked. Suddenly, a man fell out of the mirror and onto the floor. His eyes were closed, and he was breathing very heavily. He was pale and seemed paralyzed. It was as if he had just awoken from a coma. The man was the plainest person the twins had ever seen. He had no distinctive characteristics whatsoever. He had spent so much time reflecting others that he had lost himself completely.
Where am I?
The man said between deep breaths. He had enough energy to keep one eye open at a time, but not both. The evil queen picked up her heart of stone, and the twins could see the change in her face as her body was reunited with its soul. She was a different person. She was a person.
Mira, it's me. It's Evely. You're free,
the evil queen said. Her voice was different while she held the stone. She spoke softly, with love and affection. Tears poured down her face. The twins could see the reflection of the evil queen and the man in the mirror of truth. The reflections weren't those of the pale man and hooded woman who were actually in the room with them. They were of two young people. One was the beautiful girl the evil queen had once been, and the other, a very handsome young man that Mira must have been before being imprisoned in the mirror. Evely cradled Mira in her arms and slowly rocked him.
You're free, Mira. You're free,
she repeated softly.
I freed you just like I promised. I'm so sorry it took me as long as it did.
The man opened both his eyes and stared up at her. She had only freed the very little of him that was left. The rest had faded away a long time ago.
Evely,
he said, and a slight smile appeared on his face, recognizing the name. The smile lasted only a moment. His eyes floated shut, and he stopped breathing.
Mira?
The evil queen asked.
Mira!
Mira didn't move. He was as lifeless as he looked. His reflection disappeared entirely from the golden mirror.
No,
the evil queen said.
No!
The tears were running down much faster now.
Come back! Please! Come back!
Alex and Connor became emotional at the sight of it. The evil queen held the body of the man from her mirror in a tight embrace. She sobbed into him, still holding on to the heart of stone. She had worked her entire life for this, but she was too late. The wolves were starting to become impatient outside the castle. Many were pacing back and forth across the drawbridge, others were lying across the entrance corridor, and one was sharpening his teeth with Goldilocks' sword. They had been waiting long enough for the evil queen, and they growled and grunted with restlessness. Suddenly, Malamclaw's ears perked up, and he looked into the horizon. The ground was vibrating as something large was traveling their way.
What is that?
He asked. A cavalcade of soldiers stampeded toward the castle at full speed. The soldiers were dressed in silver and green armor and came from the Northern Kingdom. They were led by Froggy and Sir Grant, sharing a horse. Jack was riding Porridge beside them. All the wolves jumped up.
All right, boys. We're done waiting for the queen,
Malamclaw said.
We're going inside to get Red Riding Hood, and then we're getting out of here.
All the wolves obediently howled, and they ran into the castle. One of them pulled a lever with his mouth, raising the drawbridge. The soldiers assembled on the edge of the moat.
The evil queen is in there, Froggy said to Sir Grant. The wolves are looking for her. They took my friends.
Evil queen,
Sir Grant called out with his booming voice.
This is Sir Grant of Her Majesty Queen Snow White's Royal Guard. You have 30 seconds to surrender, or we will open fire on the castle.
The soldiers aligned a row of cannons. Jack hopped off Porridge and found Goldilocks' sword on the ground. She was in there.
Prepare the cannons,
Sir Grant ordered, and his soldiers positioned the cannons facing the castle.
Fire!
A cannon blasted the raised drawbridge into pieces. The entire castle rattled from the hit.
Prepare to fire again,
Sir Grant ordered.
Hold your fire, Jack yelled. There are innocent people in that castle. You mustn't fire until we can safely get them out of there. I have reason to believe Queen Red Riding Hood may be inside.
Grant looked fearful. He couldn't have the death of an innocent queen on his hands.
You have 10 minutes before we open fire, Grant told Jack. Get in there and save as many people as you can.
Jack nodded without hesitation. If the woman he loved was in harm's way, nothing would stop him from saving her.
I'll go with you,
Froggy said, secretly alarmed at his own bravery, which had suddenly swept over him.
You may need a hand.
He and Froggy hopped onto Porridge. The horse took a few steps back and then charged toward the castle, jumping over the moat and through the large opening where the drawbridge had been a moment before. The castle's dungeon was small, but it had a row of several small cells. Goldilocks and Red Riding Hood's robes and gags had been removed, but they were each put in their own cell, mostly so Goldilocks wouldn't kill Red before the wolves had their chance. The huntsman and the huntress watched over them like father and daughter hawks.
I just don't understand why my army hasn't rescued me yet. Shouldn't that be their top priority?
Red whined.
If I was Cinderella, none of this crap would be happening.
I outran your army because, like most things about you and your kingdom, they're slow,
Goldilocks said. Besides, they've probably already elected a new queen by now.
That's not funny, Red said. This has been the worst day of my entire life. I didn't even know it was possible to be kidnapped twice in one day.
The wolf stormed into the dungeon. Red went white with fear.
Soldiers are invading the castle,
Malumclaw said.
We're not waiting for the evil queen any longer. We're taking Red Riding Hood now.
Get the queen,
the huntsman said to his daughter. The huntress nodded and ran down to the opposite side of the dungeon and up a small stone staircase. She looked back before climbing it, not sure if leaving her father alone was a good idea.
No! Red screamed. You can't let them take me!
She looked all over the dungeon, unsure who she was talking to. She didn't have any friends in here.
I'm ready for this day to be over!
Fine, you can take her,
the huntsman said to the wolves. He unlocked her cell, and Red jumped up and pushed the door open, knocking the huntsman back into the wolves. She ran as fast as she could down to the other side of the dungeon and up the stone staircase the huntress had climbed.
After her!
Malumclaw ordered, and he and his pack ran after the young queen. She managed to get a head start as the wolves had trouble fitting into the staircase. Moments later, Jack and Froggy emerged into the dungeon. Jack was wielding Goldilocks' sword.
Stand back!
Jack yelled at the huntsman, who backed into a corner with his hands up.
Jack!
Goldilocks said, clutching the bars of her cell.
What are you doing here?
Porridge found me, Jack said. I knew something must be wrong, because you weren't with her. She led me here, and I met up with Snow White's army on the way.
They stared at each other so lovingly, it made Froggy uncomfortable.
Splendid! I'll find Queen Red Riding Hood and the twins while you reunite, he said, and hopped back in the direction they'd come from.
The huntsman pulled a crossbow out from under his fur coat.
Jack, watch out!
Goldilocks screamed. The huntsman began shooting arrows at Jack. He ducked and dived, barely eluding them. Goldilocks had to dodge the arrows too. They were ricocheting off the stone walls in every direction. The huntsman moved like a machine, reloading his crossbow instantaneously each time he fired. Goldilocks picked up an arrow that had landed near her and began picking the lock of her cell with the arrowhead. Jack was trying to block the arrows with the sword. It was getting harder. The arrows were coming at him much faster. He hit one perfectly, and it flew behind the huntsman. The huntsman grunted and froze. His eyes bulged, and he fell flat on his face. The arrow had bounced off the wall behind him and was now sticking out of his back. The huntsman was dead.
Jack, behind you!
Goldilocks yelled. Jack turned around, and the huntress stabbed him in the arm with her dagger. She had seen the whole thing.
Ah!
Jack screamed. He dropped the sword and fell to the ground. He crawled across the floor and sat himself up against the wall. He was clutching his arm. Blood was everywhere. The huntress walked toward him with her dagger raised. She didn't speak, but she had pure rage in her eyes. As far as she was concerned, Jack had just killed her father. She swooped toward him for a fatal strike. Goldilocks blocked the dagger with her sword. She had picked the lock of her cell and repossessed her sword just in time to save Jack's life.
I think it's time you and I had a little girl talk,
Goldilocks said, and kicked the huntress in the stomach. The huntress rolled to the other side of the room and hopped back to her feet. Goldilocks and the huntress circled each other for a moment. They stared each other down, waiting for the other to make the first move. Goldilocks swung her sword at the huntress, and the duel began. The huntress only had a dagger half the size of Goldilocks' sword, but she used it well. Goldilocks had finally found her match. They moved all around the dungeon, each shielding offensive strikes from the other. The huntress cornered Goldilocks. Goldilocks ran up the wall and flipped over the huntress, cornering her now.
Where did you learn to do that?
Jack asked.
I'll tell you later, Goldilocks said.
The huntress headbutted Goldilocks and ran out of the dungeon.
Come back here,
Goldilocks called out and chased after her. They continued their fight throughout the castle, climbing higher and higher as they went. Meanwhile, Red Riding Hood was being chased through the castle by the big bad wolf pack. She was running for her life, and tears were streaming down her face. She'd only been this scared once before, an infamous day when she'd visited her grandmother as a child. Red wasn't crying from fear alone, though. She was also upset that she was getting one of her favorite dresses ruined. Red also wished she had chosen shoes better equipped for running when she dressed herself earlier that day. She reached one of the highest levels of the castle. Areas of the floor had rotted away, and she had to be very careful not to fall through any of the large holes that would drop her several stories below. The wolves behind her were not being so cautious. They had a hard time getting traction on the smooth wooden floor and kept sliding into the holes, howling as they fell to their deaths. Red ran up a wooden staircase. The upper half of the staircase crumbled away in front of her as she passed the landing.
That's not good, Red said.
She looked back at the steps behind her and saw Malmclaw. She was trapped. The wolf made his way toward her, one step at a time, enjoying the aggravation it caused.